the same. I'd appreciate it if you'd come up and sit in this chair and give us your name and who you represented. If you represent yourself, say so. And just tell us whatever your problems are, whatever suggestions you have. Any questions before we start? On our procedure, anything like that? Lloyd? You look restless. But I realize it's we usually have a little trouble when the meeting started because there's no use to politicians coming through and asking them.
Yeah,
pretty
good,
Joe. Yeah, I'll
try to get
you. Okay, Senator.
My name is Lloyd Cannon, fisherman, Kodiak, representing myself. Well, one I think that you guys are probably, I know Kay is familiar, the department has 2 or 3 years of, I don't even know what bill it is, but they've tried to get through legislation that would, in our king crab fish, we have a unique problem that the Department of Fish and Game closes the season, and they insist that the gear is out of the water the day they close the season, and lots of times we have rough weather, storms. The fishermen are allowed 10 days under, apparently it was for game hunters and other people to get rid of their game till, 10 days after the end of the season. Well, it also includes crab fishermen, so the Department of Fish and Game has been insisting that we have all our gear out of the water when they close the season, and they've really put a hardship on the fishermen with this due to the fact that if a storm's blowing, and a lot of the little boats have to start in with their gear days ahead of time to get it in by the end of the season, whereby if we could write an amendment or something to this bill. I don't know just what bill it is. Do you know, Kay?
I think it's under the regulations, Lloyd.
That would be under...
No, this is legislative. This is that allows people with deer and ducks and elk to have 10 days or something after the end of the season to still have their game and stuff in their possession. It isn't under regulations, Kay.
It's a sports fisherman thing.
Yeah, but it's under a legislative act, mm-hmm. And it also includes commercial fishery. Well, now they say even the little boats, they get about half the time that the larger boats do the fish because the fact that they, if they've got 60 pots out in the water and they haul 5 or 8 pots, they've got to start hauling in 6 days before the season. And on a 10-day season, by the time they got it out, it's time for them to start hauling their gear back in again. And if this was changed so the Department of Fish and Game could tell us all crab will be dockside or checked in with the representative of the Department of Fish and Game by a certain date, and then you've got 10 days to get your gear out of the water or something, then the little boats would really have the same chance as the big boats. But even the big boats now are having trouble because with 75 pots in the water, if it happens to blow that day, my God, you're out there. And gale force winds trying to stack these pots 10 high. And I don't know, just I'm sure you guys could research, or one of the assistants could research it and find the bill that include this. And I'm sure it, in the department, I think they've told me, when Simon's here, he told me 2 different years I don't know how they go about it. The commissioner goes and talks to some part of the legislature and tries to get somebody interested in writing amendment. Well, I don't know that it ever did, Kay. I was told that it had been done 2 years in a row, and every year we'd get back to the Board of Fish and Game and say, well, why the hell can't you do this? And they go, but the legislature's got to change his bill in order to...
Yeah, pardon me for interrupting, but I, like I say, I'm resource chairman. I've been the resource committee for years, and the logical place for it to be would be with me, and I haven't seen it. If anyone had it, I would have told them.
Right.
But then, in other words, Fisher, Ed, do you want to sit right up with us? Grab a chair someplace and bring it. And, well, now what do you do now? You take your crab out of the pots and close the doors on them.
Well, they have to be moved into 15 fathom. That's what they normally have to do now. And for the smaller boats, it entails, if it happens to be blowing 3 days previous to the season, or even in order to get their gear in, they got to start with a 10-day season. They got to start 3-4 days ahead of time moving their gear for shallow water, and 3-4 days getting it out there. And all that's a whole 10-day season. They're running their gear back and forth, whereby if the season would end the 10th, and you had to check in with the representative at 3 stations, probably in Kodiak, Alitech, there's some way of checking in. The Department of Fish and Game could sure arrange that. In fact, they've always said they could arrange it, and they've always said they've tried to get this changed, but we've never, apparently you people are unfamiliar with it, but every year we get the Board of Fish and Game in Anchorage, we have a great big fight over this. Well, why the hell can't you do it? Now you've had a year to do it, but especially in the crab fisheries that's involved, because it's getting real hazard with these boats out there trying to work this type of gear when they give them a 10-day season, and It ain't only for the little boats. We even this last season, we even lost one of the big boats on a special 6-day season trying to get his gear out when he shouldn't have been. But when this type of pressure is on, a lot of people do things that they wouldn't normally do under any other circumstance.
I've heard the controversy on the subject, but it just wasn't.
Another thing I'd like to, I don't think this legislature from the state of Alaska are putting enough, I don't know what you'd call it, you know, pressure on the federal government and stuff to start instituting more protection for our fisheries from foreign national. And I'm talking about this 200-mile limit. There's states like Maine and all the rest of them are going full out now, you know, on a 200-mile limit, and then the fish that are bought, of course, raised within this country's stream system or whatever you call them, are can't be fished beyond 200 miles, but we sure don't seem to be getting enough, to me, real pressure out of the state of Alaska. You see an article now and then, but I think at this time, especially with the big meetings that are coming up, it'd really be a ideal time for the legislature and, of course, the governor. You see him pop it every now and then, but especially the legislature to really start trying to whip this in and get after that McKernan and him to change our position. In fact, we're one of the few nations that are left still sitting back and screaming 12 miles and not 200 miles, and the majority of them are going the other way, so I'd sure like to see our position on that change, and I'm sure the state of Alaska could help with a little pressure on it.
I think you'll find that. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, speaking of McKernan, it's something I'd like to mention to everyone here is, you know, he is resigning his ambassadorship to take a teaching position at a university, and I was told the other day that there's a strong possibility that the federal government might not fill that position. And we're urged, for everyone, if you just drop a postcard to each member of our congressional delegation, urging them to be sure that we do fill that position as a, you know, in the ambassador status
right. That
McKernan has had, because we're about to lose him. Incidentally, we have a copy here of Senate Bill 1, 1988, that one of Magnuson's.
That's the 200-mile limit, the same one. Yeah, I've read it and studied it.
We haven't passed a resolution on this, but we pass a resolution every year protesting the foreign fisheries, and it doesn't seem to be doing us much good, and maybe we're going to have to pass more of them all at the same time. But I do hope that everybody will write about McKernan, because we need that clout, and it's the only thing that fisheries really has.
What else I got to say? I sure wish you.
Well, the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission considered this 200-mile limit bill and decided to abstain from any action at the time without prejudice. In other words, it's still in limbo. They haven't been for it or against it. And while the position of Alaska was that we would like to promote its passage as much as possible, the rest of them backed off, and it'll be up for consideration again next year for whatever that means. It was a real sad deal, because we had hopes that the commission would adopt a recommendation for its passage, and it was so put on the agenda, but it was withdrawn. I say without prejudice, and it's in that status now. Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission, of course, as you all know, is California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. So we can't do much with the other four states abstaining from taking any action pro or con at this time.
It's a lot of hollering will do a lot of good, Ed.
Not very much.
Well, I think another problem within our fisheries, I think especially within the Kodiak District, as you know, in the last 10 years, has probably been the hottest fishery port in Alaska as far as, you know, development of new fishery, scallop, shrimp, king crab, tanner crab. And really, I don't think that our research, enforcement, and management has been allotted enough money to really run this big of fisheries. And I realize we got this squeeze with the oil up north and everything, but still, this area and district keeps pouring in the tax dollars, and every year it seems like we get less and less back out of them. They've got someplace else to spend them. And
how, pardon me for interrupting before you're done, but how was your protection here? Is there any complaints?
In Kodiak District, I'd say fine, but you want to remember it entails a Bering Sea and Dutch Harbor District and ADAC District, and we got one little boat to cover all these districts, and it just isn't adequate, is all, Joe. And I think at the end of the Dutch Harbor season, they still flew over, and there were still 16 boats fishing that day and a half after the season closed or something. I mean, but it was just, I think in Kodiak District it was adequate. I'm sure there was some minor violations, but I think they did a hell of a good job within this district right here. But I think they probably run out of money by the time they got out of this district, and I don't think the boat ever got out of this district.
That's surprisingly strong complaints against protection.
But I'd like to see a lot more done in research and the fisheries that we're fishing. We've got a Tanner fishery that could be a really good one, but I think at this point there isn't a soul knows a damn thing about them. Everybody's kind of guessing in the dark. The staff says, well, we're going to have to chop it off at 30 million and these type of statements, but they don't know whether there's 30 or 400 million pounds out there or 10 million for all that, you know, basically on the ground, the crab that we got. But they're making statements, well, we're going to have to close it at 30, and of course I agree with them due to the fact they'd better close it a year or two early and kind of study it a little before we do it. But it sure be nice to have more money to spend in research and study to see if what we have got out there are available. But each year we get to see a little piddly study, and that's about the extent of our research, you know.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to answer that. I'm on the Finance Committee of the State House, and I have the resources budget of which this is a portion. And we did pass in this budget year a research program for crab and for shrimp. I'll assure you that every consideration and effort will be done to get adequate funds for any program that you fishermen propose through the proper medium of the Fish and Game Department for presentation to the state legislature. The state legislature at this time is more in sympathy with the fishermen and with the rehabilitation of the Alaska State Fisheries than has ever been in the past. And while we don't expect to be able to do everything because of funds, why we are making a very sincere effort to provide funds for every bona fide item that would tend to inure to the progress of the fisheries. So you should have some research going on here right now on crab and shrimp.
We do have some going on, but just talking now, don't get me wrong, their appropriation stuff have to go up to a chain of command, and that'll be the commissioner or somebody presents us. Well, if he's got orders from somewhere up in the executive branch to, we've got to hold down a budget of the Department of Fish and Game to a certain level, their budget comes up to approximately this amount that they're going to present, and a lot of the guys that are doing the field work know they need a lot more money. By the time they work out a budget and everything, and they move it up the ladder, and he crosses off half of it, now half, of course, by the time it gets to you from the commissioner's order, it sounds like it's a quarter of what we actually need. But talking to the people in the field, I know they need, you know, more vessels, more charter time, more of this type of things. Ed, by the time it works up through this administrative process, it seems like they somebody along the line decided they need about a quarter of what they basically need. And I think if they just studied the size of the fisheries and the dollar value of the fisheries, they would tell you that it needs a hell of a lot more study than we've got.
That is true. The only thing is, though, that we have to act through, well, call it proper channels, and the proper channel happens to be the Fish and Game Department. Now, if we do get a tremendous reaction from your legislators here in Juneau, why then possibly greater consideration is given to the issue at hand. I'll say this, though, that the Commissioner of Fish and Game is before the Finance Committee, and he endures a very searching interrogation with respect to all of the items on his budget, especially with respect to things like research and other unusual, out of the ordinary items on his budget.
Senator Paul.
In fact, that shrimp and crab research had been cut out of the budget last year, and it was put back in.
Well, then maybe we ought to look at the other side then. If we've got the proper budget that you people feel is a proper budget for the study, then maybe we better find out the reason why we're not getting better results out of these budgets, and maybe we ought to go the other way on it. But somewhere along the line, we don't have the knowledge in the fisheries, and we've got a lot of good, fine knowledge. There's no question. Maybe it just takes that much time. I don't know, but it's your talking to them. It seems like a lot of their programs are, let's say, limited In other words, they've got so many dollars and they limited it to so much research, and that's all they can do basically that year.
I believe that this committee can assure you, if we, see, like Kay said, she knows, because I know that she's real thorough on that budget, whether she's on the finance committee or not, on her Kodiak budget, anyhow, anything for Kodiak. And the demand was from Kodiak for this research on shrimp, tanner crab from this area here. And I can assure you, each one of us has the documents, and you go through them, and the money's in there, I'm sure it is. And if the Department of Fish and Game didn't use it because of, you know, some reason, without a real sufficient reason, that there's going to be something said about it. It's,
of course, I don't think we ever get as much as we want.
I don't think I've got any other things to ask you people for. The one thing I'd like to ask you, any chance you guys could send us a few more salmon than you sent us the last couple of years down this way?
What do you think about that? Saltwater rearing pens, gravel incubators.
Well, I think a lot of studies have been made on it. The state ought to definitely make a study of this, if it's stream clearance or whether the Canadians, I know, have a program of some form of artificial spawning other than hatcheries. You know, I forget what it is. They build riftways or streams or... I think the program certainly should be studied, that's for sure.
You're referring to the spawning channels. The spawning channel is all right where you're along the highway, and you know, we can get a lot of equipment to it, but you have to move and keep clean about 6 yards of gravel for every 2 cents that spawn. And so we're more looking at gravel incubators. You know, you get awful expensive when I'm building an artificial channel, and you know, sifting the gravel, moving the gravel in, especially when you can't get equipment to them. And there's so many of our streams that you're lucky when you get to them with a dog team or something, let alone, you know, move equipment to them.
Yeah. That's about all I've got. Thank you.
Well, thanks
for your time.
A lot, Mr. Cass. I hope you get up and visit with you.
Good ones.
Still live the same place?
Yeah, Joe.
Does anyone else wish to testify? Yes, could you come on up and give us your... Well, this gentleman here, I know this first.
Right.
And then you'll be next.
I just want to continue. Excuse me.
Give us your name.
Harold Jones. I have been watching and listening for a long time with interest. We're... I think that Massachusetts and Maine have gone on record to have established their state fisheries law limits to 200 miles. And I realize that these fisheries limits that they have established probably can't be enforced from a state level. But nevertheless, I feel it has some value or psychological value in influencing the eventual 200-mile limit for all of the U.S. If it happens state by state, eventually the nation will have to adopt it. And if Maine and Massachusetts can do this, is there any reason why Alaska can't do this?
All right. Well, we could endorse it, but then I think a big hole back at the present time to see how your salmon is included in there. You know, too high, just a plain 200-mile limit would be disastrous to our salmon. And then if they put a clause in their historic fisheries, you know, countries fish their fisheries, historically, we'll stay with it regardless of the 200-mile limit. We'll not only lose our salmon, we'll have the same mess we have now because the countries will be in other countries that's historically fished that will be in it. You know, like you say, the bill's in pretty good form now, but I'm still not satisfied that it'll stay that way.
Well, can you explain to me what was about California and Oregon and Washington? What was their reason for not wanting to go along with Alaska when they pushed for the 200-mile limit?
Tuna.
Well, I can see California not wanting to go along with it because of tuna, but I can't understand why Washington and Oregon... their tuna is off their Washington, Oregon coast that they're working for, but I can see California. They want to fish the whole world with their tuna fleet, but I can't understand why that. I know the vast majority of the Washington, Oregon fishermen have been viciously pushing toward that 200-mile limit or trying to get it, and how their states can ignore that effort of the fishermen in favor of the California tuna fleet is more than I can understand. Now, I can't see why Washington, Oregon, and Alaska couldn't push for 200-mile limit. And that doesn't mean if you had a 200-mile limit that you couldn't still have some control over your salmon. What control have we got now with a 12-mile limit? You can just hope and suggest that the Japanese stay away from your fisheries product, away from your salmon, and you can suggest that they stay outside of their, whatever it is, 180th, 175th parallel, but that doesn't mean they don't get within it. And I think a 12-mile limit is so ridiculous, it's hardly even worth the paper it's written on. It's hardly worth the money that the Coast Guard spends to try to enforce it, because 12 miles is such a minute area in the overall continental shelf or overall fisheries area that our fleet works. The 12 miles, you can throw a rock that far proportionately. What I mean, it's so minute, it's hardly worth the effort it takes to patrol it. And it's so easy to slip inside of 12 miles when a foggy or snowy day comes and scoop up the product. And the minute the sky clears so an airplane can see you, slip outside of the 12-mile limit. They do it all the time. And they can destroy your resource all viciously with a 12-mile limit. Because how many days is the sky overcast and how's it, and snowing or raining? How's an airplane going to see them any distance during inclement weather? They get 4 or 5 days of cloudy weather or heavy, low, overcast weather, and they can clean out an area. Some of the boats that fish the Metrofeni area tell me that Metrofeni shrimp grounds many years ago was really good fishing, really good. And a big Russian fleet got in there, and some of the boats actually saw and observed this Russian fleet during some heavy, overcast weather, and they went right into the bay within a mile of the beach and scooped in and out through there, and they just virtually wiped every living shrimp out of there. And it was, they say, 5 years before that ground was productive again, because it took that long to build up after it got this mopping up from the Russians. And I think a 12-mile limit is so feeble that it's hardly even worth the papers written on. At least it could be moved out to 25 miles. It'd be a little easier to catch a boat, a vessel. If it can't be moved to 200, I think it ought to be at least pushed for 25 miles, and that is still minute. When I think of the Fairweather grounds that lay 48 and 50 miles offshore, where our biggest southeastern fleet works, and all of our grounds around here are banks that are so many of them outside of the 12-mile limit, that 12 miles is, as far as I'm concerned, not even worth the papers written on. It's useless. We spend millions of dollars for Coast Guard cutters and airplanes and helicopters to patrol a 12-mile limit, and it's virtually worthless. It's just too small to be of any value. And if they can't push it out to 25 or 50, if you're sure that this 200 is disastrous, and I'm not sure that it is, but if you can't have 200, at least we could have 25 or 50. And I understand the Canadians are practically ready to move to the 200-mile limit. And all articles I've been reading about them. But I certainly think the 200-mile limit is the only answer. And there's no reason why you can't have this 175th or whatever it is parallel for salmon abstention and still have 200-mile limit. And even from a state basis, even if the state declares a 200-mile limit plus the 170th abstention, I think that would be a great move, even if you can't enforce it. At least it has a psychological value on the other states who are sitting on the fence wondering whether they should make the move or not. That's about all I had to say.
If you comments from members of the committee?
Well, I'll just say that the commissioners of the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission had anticipated voting in and recommending this action. And the advisory boards, the very last minute, withdrew it from the agenda without prejudice.
What do you mean without prejudice?
I mean, you know, failure to act is a negative action.
Right, okay.
You follow?
Yeah.
There is no negative action yet on this. In other words, it's as if nothing had ever happened. We had quite a hiatus on it. Long discussion on parliamentary procedure and the history of the Pacific Marine Fisheries bylaws and a whole ball of wax rolled up in it. Whether after it had been submitted on the agenda, it could be withdrawn legally. And they're still researching their bylaws. But why the sudden change wasn't apparent. And it had already passed the initial scrutiny of the committee developing the agenda and the various proposals that had gone in. But at the last minute, when it was up for a vote, it was withdrawn. And I don't know really the true story, but I think California had something to do with it somehow and maybe had used some leverage on the other states to keep it status quo for the time being. And there was even some discussion about the law of the sea and a few other things. That was all I know about it. Mm-hmm. I'll know more about it eventually. In other words, it'll surface.
I'd sure like to have the answers when you get them.
Okay.
One other thing I want to go along with this gentleman that was just ahead of me. I think that on a closing of a king crab season or any other pot season, tanner crab or otherwise, whenever the cutoff date is, that's the day that the pots have to be all open, or the doors have to be open, and the baiters have to be out. But that business of getting pots out on midnight of a certain date is sooner or later you're going to kill some fishermen, because they're going to be trying to get them out in vicious stormy weather, and they're going to, with pots slamming and banging around and crashing in rough weather. And you're, like he mentioned, stacking pots real high, and in the middle of the night, it's a very dangerous operation. And if you're fighting frantically to get your pots off the ground by a deadline, it's a dangerous way to fish. And either you should have all the crab delivered by a certain date, or else you should have all the pots open. And I think delivered by a certain date would be a reasonable way, probably. But either that, or have all the pots open and have all the gates tied open on them and all the baiters out of them. And a pot laying on the grounds with the doors tied open and the baiters out of them is not fishing. It's just a piece of gear that hasn't been retrieved yet. But this is really a dangerous operation.
Any more comments?
That's all I have right there. But go ahead.
Are you a crab fisherman or shrimp?
I fish shrimp and crab.
Shrimp. What's your boat? Which?
Marcy J.
Oh, Marcy J. Has anybody ever discussed with you why we're in such a bind on a 200-mile limit? What the reasons are?
Well, I've known for years that the tuna industry has been bucking it, or been pushing it.
In Alaska.
Well, I don't know. Well, they say it'll mess up your salmon, but...
But they never explain why.
Well, I know we have an ocean-roaming salmon. I realize this, and go ahead and give this point.
Has anybody ever laid this thing on you, just what the problem is with that 200-mile limit? You is what has been told to us by the people who advise the feds and who are on the North Pacific Fisheries Commission. Okay. I'll give you a schematic of the state of Alaska. The way it works, the boy, I left out the most important part, didn't I? The salmon are born in the stream. You all know that. There are a number of rather significant stream systems in here.
big ones are in the Bristol Bay, Yukon, Kuskokwim, Kodiak, Cook Inlet, Prince William Sound, and Southeastern. Now, there is a phenomenon out in the mid-ocean that is called the North Pacific Gyre, and that's created by the Japanese current moving easterly and hitting the coast of the United States just north of, or right in the neighborhood of Puget Sound. Part of it turns north and swings this way. It comes here. The other part swings south and becomes a California current. Now, this swirling effect creates this gyre in the North Pacific. That is where the salmon who are hatched in Kodiaks, Cook Inlets, Prince William Sound, Southeastern, and some of the Pacific Northwest river systems. When the salmon leave us and go out, this is where they go. Now, if you take a sampling out there in mid-ocean of just where the salmon are, you find that there's a very heavy concentration right in the center of the gyre, as you would expect, and then it thins out as you get toward the edges of it. Now, the salmon who are hatched in these western Alaskan streams, some of them will come down, as the senator and the representative right here will tell you, and enter our Pacific gyre and join our stocks. But generally, they drift westward. They come out here, and they mill around out here. Now, here's what our problem is. That, well, in the first place, the only reason we have this extension line, this agreement with the Japanese, that they will not fish east of that line, is because, as a captured nation, John Foster Dulles got that agreement from them. They don't like it, and they would drop it just like that if there was some justification or some way they figured they could get away with it. Now, if you draw a line 200 miles off the coast of the United States, like so, then pick it up off the southeastern, around Kodiak and down here, somewhere in here. But you can see from that the problem, that if the United States says the Japanese cannot come in and fish whatever stocks they're taking, perch, crab, shrimp, whatever they're taking, within that 200-mile limit, they're going to retaliate by saying the abstention treaty is no more. Follow? The Japanese have assured the American negotiators that they will. And then, here's the position we're in. Right now, the Japanese cannot come east of this line, but absent the treaty, it's our salmon, you see, that are going to be exposed to their fishing pressure, which will be outside the 200-mile limit.
We have a fleet to compete with them out there if that's what they want.
Is competition the answer? You know,
I don't say, but what you're talking about, what are we talking about the North? We're talking about Russia and Japan. I mean, Japan, Canada, and the United States. Christ, now we've got, this year we had Polish and Danish vessels off the Pacific coast. We've got the Koreans there, and they none agree with this, so they can come in there and fish anytime they want right now.
Yeah, right, right.
And we've got many, many communist China's going to be in it now that we're patting them on the back and loaning the money. They'll be overtaking a few of the damn things. So we're just, what we're really talking about, a 200-mile limit at this time would probably stop a lot of the influx of that. Our salmon fishery, naturally, we know it has to be protected some way, but apparently the Bristol Bay salmon ain't protected right now. If the Japs want them all, they take them all. If they decide to give the boys up there a few salmon, they let them have a few, but that's about the way the Bristol Bay runs are going right now.
Yeah, well, see, this is the decision that has to be made. We know that if we go to the 200-mile limit, we might as well just write off the salmon. unless we can create a new salmon who will stay within the 200-mile range. But, you know, the reason that they're out there is because there's pasture.
I think, but as far as Japan is concerned, we have other economic things we can force them off the salmon. About the time we cut off their timber supply and their natural gas supply and fuel them with their fleet by Tesoro out of Anchorage, we'd probably make them think twice.
Well, the timber that they're taking is federal timber, and, you know, what leverage have we there? Perhaps we could cut them off from the state share of Tesoro's oil, but, you know, how significant is that? They got tankers that...
I'm a little tariff for them bringing their log ships and things to Alaska waters now again. You know, something like $200-$300 a board for this.
Well,
it's a small tariff.
Yeah. I hate to be put in the position of having to argue against, you know, my own district.
No.
But these are the arguments that get thrown at me when I throw these same ideas out. You know, we've got to come up with something that works. Yeah, Guy?
Why does the 200-mile limit have to pertain to all fisheries?
Well, that's what I said. This is a decision that has to be made because the 200-mile limit right now will take care of everything except salmon that Alaska's interested in.
Will it have a 200-mile limit with a special bill pertaining to salmon?
Well, you see, this is what is proposed right now. That the United States try to work out another system of treaties with the various fishing countries that will take our salmon out of consideration of a 200-mile fishery limit. But, you know, are they going to agree to it? Do you think that we'll be able to get, for instance, the communist Chinese to agree with it? We might possibly, while there's an attitude of détente, hit the Soviet Union. Where the Japanese are so, you know, so becoming more and more difficult to deal with in fisheries. Do you think they'll go along with it? I doubt it.
I think a 200-mile limit this time will discourage Korea and China and them from building a fleet if they know we're not going to allow them in here. They won't build a big fleet. It takes a big fleet even to get a few salmon over here. And it is worthwhile, I'd have to prefer to build a big fleet just to come over and just fish the salmon. I definitely have to fish ground fish, pollock, and other stuff to even make a fleet like that feasible.
See, that's easy for you and I to say, okay, then, well, let's just go ahead and write off salmon. And we'll protect what else we have, because Kodiak, you know, we have some salmon, but primarily we have shrimp and crab, and possibly bottom fish later. But that isn't the position that Joe is in here.
Well, our biggest concern has always been the United States Navy, but they fought the 12-mile limit because they said it belonged to these states and didn't bother a thing. Now the United States Navy said, well, if you give a 200-mile limit, they ain't gonna block a damn thing as far as navigation. But there have always, at international meetings, have been the biggest single force to determine the fact that 12-mile limit, they kept saying, oh, no, no, you're going to block these straits or these straits. And we say it don't pertain to navigation of ships on ice. It just pertains to fisheries, right? But maybe it's that they insist that it's going to screw them up on their navigational rights, you know.
It goes without saying that that's the first problem that we have. I'm talking about the second problem we have.
That's Joe over here.
Oh, well. See, when you, Sacker, of course, you got to figure that North Pacific Treaty that was drawn with full consent of your West Coast congressman. They was willing to sacrifice Bristol Bay to save their own. That's when Days was a territory, save for a few garbage-eating fish that they had left down there. So they was ready to sacrifice Bristol Bay to save their own fish. And the whole thing, and just you got the same thing right there. So when they vote with block them for it. Well, Idaho votes with Washington, Oregon, and California against Alaska. And it's not much match there. They outnumber us.
The Japanese have want all the red salmon from the Bristol Bay, I understand. Why not get them to agree not to fish red salmon himself? And if we could sell them all the red salmon from Bristol Bay, just get them off the high season and we sell them all the red salmon, so pay the top dollar anyway.
I wish we could. Could come to agreement like that.
I have only one more point to make along, and then I'll let somebody else, let Ollie have my chair here. There's one other point I have in mind is... is a Fog Neck Island logging situation that is at our doorstep. It's been stated, now I don't know how factual it is, but I've heard it stated from should be reliable sources that any time you have a massive logging operation and you disturb a lot of timber, you put it into the water and you cut a lot of limbs and you cause a lot of tannic acid and other substances that come out of trees whenever you're in a logging operation to go into the bays in the adjacent areas, as well as being harmful to salmon, they say it's deadly to shrimp and crab spat or eggs or, and so Marmot Grounds is one of the most lucrative shrimp grounds that we have in Kodiak area. And I feel that if Fog Neck Island was logged heavily, that this tannic acid that might be diluted into the bays where the shrimp are spawning might be disastrous to our future shrimp runs and also crab. And I would like to see this logging operation that's planned for Fog Neck Island, I'd like to see it stopped immediately before it takes place, and find out what the effect it might be on our shrimp and crab fisheries. I feel that shrimp and crab fisheries are far more lucrative to the people of Alaska than that timber. There's only a very few Americans are going to receive much profit out of that that timber sale. I think Japs will make a lot of money on it, but I think the fisheries might suffer very heavily as a result of it. And you people, if you got something to answer on that, then I'll...
You championed that cause, both of you. If I remember, so could you answer?
Well, the whole town's been fighting, and I've been fighting it in the legislature. Yeah. I got a resolution through the Senate, just sailed through, but we got it over in the House, and Mr. Fink honored me on that innocuous little resolution by assigning it to five committees, and that's sure death. Well, I got it through four of them, and it's stuck up in finance now, and what a resolution on a Fog Neck timber has to do with the finance committee, I don't know. Maybe Ed could say he's on that committee, but... This summer, I testified before the Federal Water Resources Committee on the same subject, and they promised to give us serious consideration. As you know, the sale has taken place. We're trying to get it canceled, and we're still fighting, and we'll keep right on fighting just as long as we can. They still haven't made the cut, and we're hoping that we can get it canceled before they ever start. But if you ever have a spare moment, wait.
Give him what for. But I want to point out before you write to him, and if you should say the same thing you just did, he would have the answer for you, and that is that it's stipulated in that sale that they cannot put any of those logs in the water. They're going to have to barge them. See, so come up with some argument that he doesn't have an answer just right there.
Well, even the offfall falling onto the ground and then washing out into the bays and the stream, even if the logs never touch the water, could still have a disastrous effect, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, you can pick that up.
Yeah.
Chairman.
Okay.
You can write butts if you want to. I think you're wasting 11-cent stamp, but if we can get our governor to raise a little heck, maybe butts will pay some attention to it. But one of the things, like Ed says, it's true, you know, they're supposed to not ever touch the water. But we're all concerned, and I'm sure you would be too, about the siltation and all the other things and the lack of regrowth on a fog neck. And there are so many points against that timber sale and so many different groups involved in objecting to it that I think that that the state as a state should object to it. And this is why I suggested the other, but it certainly wouldn't hurt to write both of them.
Well,
I wasn't suggesting you shouldn't write to the governor. I was suggesting that in addition to that, you should write to the
Spend 22 cents instead of 11. Okay, that's fine.
Well, it takes 8 for the governor.
Well, I watched the logging in southeastern Alaska. I just sailed through southeastern on my way up here last July, and I was just appalled when I looked at Zarembo Island and along through all down through the Ketchikan area, from Ketchikan up to Petersburg especially, and along through Chatham Straits. I sailed through Chatham Straits mostly at night, so I couldn't see it all. But
and what happened at Silver Bay? Is this what you were talking about with the tannic acid?
Yeah, right in Sitka and Silver Bay there. And another thing, you can't cut one tree without doing a little damage to the salmon streams. And whenever you get, they're supposed to stay back 1,000 feet from the stream, but how about the feeder streams that feed that stream? It increases the runoff, makes the runoff faster, it erodes the soil, it just does all kinds of bad things and no good things for any form of fisheries, salmon or crab or shrimp or any other thing. That's all I have. I'll let you people.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Jones. Ole? You have something you'd like to say?
These guys just about covered everything, huh?
Okay, I think you can add to it.
You might be able to pick up something else.
And don't hurt to tell us several times.
Tell
make sure it soaks in.
I'll
talk about it. Yeah,
Ole
Harder. Yeah, talking about the Danes, I remember when they were fishing king salmon in the high seas, just little poor old Danes there. It wasn't very long before this country put a lot of pressure on not to buy king salmon, or any Danish product, cheese or anything else. And in no time flat, the Danes agreed not to fish any king salmon on the high seas. So economic pressures does work in salmon. And I think economic pressures can also work on salmon, both with regard to Bristol Bay, Kodiak, and Prince William Sound. And I do favor the 200-mile limit, and I have to kind of agree that if the guys are going to come in here and fish Red China, North Korea, North Vietnam, there's nobody stopping them. You know, we got an agreement with Japan, but that's all. And the way this world is going today, they're going to want fish, and if they want to fish, they're going to come in here anyway. I wanted to say something about that timber deal, too. Harold covered it pretty well, but I think one thing the legislators can do, if they do go ahead and cut this timber, which they might, at least pass a law that they're responsible for the logs and allow the fishermen to log patrol and pick up the logs and sell them back to the mills. That way it works very effective in Puget Sound. The guys are able to keep the sound clean. You go through Puget Sound, you see very few logs. You come into Canada, southeast, and it's a mess. But I don't know if you can get a law like that too, but that would sure help.
We've
gotten it through the
house. We do have it through an unworkable form.
That salvage law of
yes.
Peratra,
I think
yes.
It's
yeah.
Yeah. We do have a kind of an unworkable version of a log.
You might
don't have many takers in southeastern because I guess most of the timber on the beaches just laid there too long.
Yeah, well, it's
salvaging it.
But if you get the program started fresh, you know, it's you can keep it pretty well cleaned up. And if there's a buck in it in the wintertime, the guys go out and pick them up. We talked before about these fishing regulations and laws. I looked at it down here. The book is that thick. It's been patched up, it's been added to. And I think the time has come to start a brand new look at this whole laws and regulations. Wipe the whole slate clean and set up a good committee with technicians, lawyers, professional, and industry people, and maybe start from scratch. That's it. So you can't hardly figure it out anymore.
I think that's one thing that this committee is probably laying the ground for.
We'll find you, yeah.
At least that's what I intended.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to be a long, slow process.
It's a long process, but it's certainly something that's needed, yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes these things happen quicker than you think it. Of course, I've been in office 5 terms, and some things I've worked on ever since I've been in here. Not done, but
I know, John.
It's part of what we're doing. Going to go through everything. Go ahead. That Mr. Bennett, there's our attorney, and he's recording everything. And mm-hmm. He'll probably spend between now and the session researching what was said, and then we'll meet when the session starts with the fisheries committees and resource committees and see what we can come up with. There'll be legislation, and we hope to make some changes.
Yeah.
But that's why we want to get all the testimony and find out everything we can.
Yep.
Go ahead, Ollie. I shouldn't interrupt.
That's fine. I listened to Lloyd talk about money being needed here, and I agree with him. I don't know just how much money the fishery industry brings into the general fund. Do we bring sufficient money into the general fund, would you say, to support the proper enforcement, the proper research and so forth? Do the fishing industry pay enough money to support itself?
It just depends on how I say they do. And that's, like I say, as far as enforcement, stuff like that, whether we do not, we're required by law and constitution to manage and protect our resources.
But we don't have enough enforcement.
We bring in plenty of money, and we employ plenty of people. Go ahead on enforcement. I want to hear.
Yeah, I realize if we do bring enough money into the general fund, then we should be able to get the money out of the general fund to get the proper research and the proper enforcement. But if it isn't the case, then I favor some way of raising the money. I feel the fishing industry should be capable of paying enough money into the fisheries so that we can afford the proper research and the proper enforcement. If we don't pay enough into our taxes, well, stick it to us. You know, let's pay our share. That's the way I feel about it. And on this enforcement issue here, it was pretty fair in Kodiak. We had the resolution here, but the rest of the chain is running hog wild, specifically talking about the crab fishery, and, of course, the foreign fishery. And now, they've had various systems of enforcement. And one of them that I know worked quite successfully in the North Sea, where the state automatically, there's no choice. Every fifth boat, I think it is, I could be wrong on the number. But he's named an enforcement boat. He has a tag put in his bloody boat, and that's it. If somebody get nailed fishing illegal, he gets a fine. But the guy that's an enforcement boat, if he isn't informing on the boat, his fine is 3 times as high. I mean, you can't afford. You know, if somebody breaks the law, I'm not talking about little chicken stuff, you know, where somebody hasn't got a buoy mark right, or he's caught in the line, you know, but if he's inside or fishing in closed air, like an Aydek when it's closed, a Dutch harbor here or something like that, you know, that's a definite way of solving that problem. Because that enforcement, either we got to have money, and we got to have at least one boat in each area, both for crab and shrimp, and then, of course, salmon. It's pretty well funded, but not enough. So, that's about all I have to say on enforcement. The money, there are several ways to get it. You can get it through license fees. I think personally the license fees are not too high right now. If you stand a little more, if you need some more money, it might be an easy way to raise additional money. You can get it through a landing tax. There's several ways to get it, but if we got to have this enforcement. If we don't get it pretty doggone quick, we're not going to have nothing to worry about because it'll all be gone. That's all I got.
Anything to add to it?
One cheering note we have heard, Ole, that looks pretty hopeful for getting money to convert those boats mm-hmm. that they have here, which will help some.
It'll help quite a bit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll still need more. The state's so huge, and all the other areas that we've been in, they've really been screaming about enforcement. They say that this is grossly inadequate.
Yeah. We lucked out here in this particular crab season because we had the resolution here, you know, but that's the only place the resolution worked during the crab season. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Does anyone else wish to testify? Could you sit right up and give your name and who you represent?
Alan Panamero. I'm regional director of the local rural cap agency here in Cody.
What's your name again?
Alan Panamero. I'm here on behalf of another person who asked me to speak, but I believe I'm speaking for those people in the villages, residents, and speaking about small boat fishermen and the protection of those people who are in the villages in which the fishing is the sole, fishing industry is the sole way of life for these people. One of the things that's been happening just in the last few years, and not knocking the bigger boats, is that in the case of the crab industry and the quota, in regards to the quota, the larger boats are more or less taking the crab way before the little boat would be able to fish the crab and be able to make a fair living in this area. And one of the things we ask is that if there can be some kind of protection for the little people. I'm talking about the little boats. We're talking about 24 footers, 32 footers, 48. We're talking between 24 and probably around 50 feet boats. And these boats really don't have any chance out, say, in an area of crab fishing. And we'd like to know if there's anything that can be done on it. We've been talking about different ways, possible ways that we can do. One is maybe limiting the gear, but we didn't think that would be too fair. Another way would probably in the area of districts, say like a boat within, say from the small boat up to 40 or 50 foot would fish in a certain area with a certain quota. And in the larger boats, fish outside that area. What are the things that the little boats cannot do? And that is they cannot sail more than about 2 or 3 miles offshore because of the weather and because of their capability of fuel handling.
Comments from members of the committee on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's an item for the Board of Fish and Game.
I know. We talked about it, and we felt that maybe there can also be something done here in the legislature in this area. And also, talking about what the gentleman before me was talking in the area of enforcement. One of the things that the directors that were of Alaska, the rural cat, were talking to Colonel Goodfellow, and he mentioned that there was only 35 enforcement people in Alaska in the fish and game, something like
59. Well, that's counting office personnel, but only got about 35 out.
Yeah, and in regards to the pipeline coming in. I know with the pipeline coming in and the influx of people coming in, is there anything being done to alleviate the problem that's going to be created by these people as far as fish and game is concerned, as far as fishing is concerned also, in the sports fishing and...
Well, right now, I talked to Commissioner Chaplin, protection, and he's going to recommend that they close a big wide swath right up through where the pipeline's going to be for all, to all hunting and fishing, and of course on a commercial fishery. Just hope that we'll make limited entry stick, just to be as much as some people oppose that. That's about the best chance we have on the commercial fishery, because there's going to be people coming in, and of course, a lot of them might work a while and start looking for ways to make a quick buck, and a lot of them will come in and won't get work. And we realize that we're going to have some real serious problems. Everyone realizes it. And we're hoping to keep ahead of it. But it's whether we can or not, just anyone's guess. I know that Ali asked us what they're starting to advertise for, what is it, 140...
security
guards, the police themselves. If I know construction workers and the types of, they'll probably import in here, 140 security guards probably couldn't take care of 70 of them. So I don't know whether that'll be sufficient or not.
Yeah.
let alone 7,000 or 10,000.
Yeah,
so we're hoping to be able to keep ahead of it.
I'm just thinking this way, because if they're having problems in that area, they might be, you know, say they have about five or six in Kodiak, just for sake of argument, that maybe they might pull two or three of them out of there, making Kodiak a lot worse.
I've thought of that already. And that's something that I did discuss with Mr. Chappell when I was in Juneau just a week ago, or 5 days, Thursday.
One of the things that just put in my mind, and that is, or the coming out of my mind, and that is the people that are out in the villages specifically because of the situation that they're in, the economic situation that they're in, and the only way we can protect those people is by protecting our fisheries. And one of the things is locally that something has to be done so that they can be protected. And we're talking about what you said a while ago, and that is basically fish farming, having our own fish in the area. That's one idea that we can come up with. I guess that's all I have to say. That's all right. I'm finished.
I know that I've met people with Pamacos.
Panamera.
Do you have anything?
No, I'm familiar with the problems that I was talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, well, thanks a lot. Does anyone else wish to testify? Yeah, you do step up and state your name, who you represent.
My name's Claire Heiner. I represent myself. And this might be for the Fish and Game Board, too. I don't know. But last spring up in the hearings, well, we had a proposal that went through was if you fish Kodiak, you couldn't fish any place else in the state for king crab. And of course, there's people against that. So they tried to get an injunction, and it didn't go through. And so it was kind of a limbo state. But we went and got some signatures and stuff, people around here that wanted to leave it the way it was. And the majority of the people here want to have it that way. It seems like there's a lot of outside pressure or some kind of pressure on it all the time. And so it's kind of a problem where the people want it, yet like when they had the on the salmon, well, it come up that it's going to open up the Bering Sea for the Kodiak fishermen to go there. And I don't even know where it came from. It was just a resolution that came, said it was supposed to be the Fish and Game Board, but nobody knows where it came from. Right? Yeah. But it just got put in there, and yet the people want it the way it is. And so you don't really know what's going to go on. Same way the commissioner has the power to, for this hardship cases. Well, all of a sudden you got all kinds of hardship cases. They go on every year. Yet if you fish here, you're not supposed to fish any place else. You have these hardship cases going out westward and go fishing. And yep, it's just up to one man to do that. And I don't doubt his intelligence, but I don't see why the boats all get to go. Some of them are real, real phony reasons. I suppose that's fishing
gear. You said there's abuse of that hardship clause. In other words, people get
it. Well, I think it should be done away with. There's a heck of fishing is a gamble. And if you lose your boat or something, well, you lost your boat. Heck, it's usually insured. But there's boats, they'll fish the Bering Sea, they come in here and fish, then they get on the hardship case, take over a hardship, and they go out to Dutch Harbor, they go out to ADAC, and it really isn't the wish of the people that are here the 95% that wouldn't go to the Bering Sea to start with. They'd fish here irregardless. They wouldn't go there. But you're talking the registered crab fishermen for the state. I imagine you've got at least 40-50% of the registered crab fishermen for the state are in Kodiak. Yet our wishes aren't, they're ignored. So it's kind of a funny situation, really.
The questions or anything, Mr. Heiner, is that it?
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree with Claire. I know that was supposed to be a tough law when it originally was put through.
Really, it looked to me like the commissioner should have been, the attorney general should have jumped on the commissioner for letting these hardships go through. Now, we've got a lot of people go from here westward after this season. And there's some instances that just as phony as a $3 bill. Yet he gives the permission to go. And another thing I might bring up, I think this probably a legislature problem, but I know of instances in the past where in order to be the skipper on a boat, you have to be an American citizen. All the rest of them don't. Where a deckhand would have to have, he'd be put on as a skipper because the rest of them, the skipper wasn't a resident. Or a citizen. And we have quite a unemployment up here in Alaska. And is it possible that you could have to be a citizen before you even go fishing?
That's
federal
law.
That's
federal?
I've checked into it, and I took a list of names and turned them in, and I did about whatever I could.
Yeah,
but I haven't given up yet. I don't think gay yet. They're hoping to work.
But there's no shortage of fishermen here. There's
in fact, that's one of our big troubles. There's too many of them.
Right. Yeah.
But that's to pass a law, you couldn't be a non-resident.
Yeah, that probably worked too. And I don't know about this limited entry. There don't seem to be no slowdown on this boat building. You know, yards are full. They build them all the time. The salmon resource is getting shorter all the time. The crab resource isn't getting any bigger, that's for sure. And yet we have a situation where you can fish the Bering Sea and choose any other place except Kodiak at this present time. If the Bering Sea was made a registration area, I think you'd really cut down the boat building on economics, because they get two and three shots at the crabs the way it is, where they can go to the Bering Sea and then pick another area.
I think that area is up to the board, though, isn't it?
Well, I have to add to that.
The opportunity of fishing in more than one place, of course, will be handled by the limited entry. And it'll be handled through the fact that you own licenses in other places. And the only way you get the license is to buy them. Happen to be there fishing at the time they go in.
You mean you pick an area at that time?
I think limited entry will handle all of that.
But of course, as long as the Bering Sea is an open area, well, it don't matter, I guess.
Well, that could be possible, but I'm sure that the commissioners will look into it, because that's one of the aspects of the bill, the control of the districts and the number of fishermen.
I think that's a point that you just brought up, that we better have our attorney there make a note of and make darn sure that we check it on. Something, like you say, we've got so many problems and so widespread that there's things that we couldn't make too.
Well, now, another thing, you know, this enforcement, we had adequate enforcement this year. Heck, it was like gangbusters, really. Cripes, you had the plane flying around at a few minutes before opening with the floodlights on the, you know, cripes, it was really scary.
Downright
in
America.
Yeah, darn near got caught. But the thing is, we have what they call a westward Lucian area for prospecting and so forth. But they robbing out at ADAC. They robbed I don't know how many millions of pounds. Now they've got to close the season at 6 because there's no crabs. And we're giving them a license to steal if you don't have adequate enforcement. And if you don't have adequate enforcement, you shouldn't give them the license to steal, because they don't do no
hunting around out there anyway. They go as far as, we don't even know how many they clip off down here in this area as far as that goes. They know they do it at Dutch and at Adak. That's not sure either, I guess.
Want to get more enforcement agents?
No, I mean what I just testified about the stealing going on.
Well, it's like I said, we're required to see that something's done about it. If we don't provide the money and vessels, it don't make it any difference what kind of regulations they pass or seasons they set. If there's no enforcement, you might as well not have any. Just throw her open and forget the resource without enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the fishermen, well, every place we've been has been concerned about the enforcement. I know fishermen at one time used to brag with the big outlaws there was, is now turning in their fellow fishermen. Now the fellow fishing's about gone.
Yeah.
And there's people asking for enforcement. It's, right at the present time, these three vessels Kay mentioned, we were trying to get the money. What's the sum? We can get $300,000 under the Marine Mammal Act for enforcing it, and we'll need $500,000 more to get them vessels in operation. And it's something I've already talked to.
Those new T-boats?
Yeah, them new T-boats.
67-footers.
Yeah, they're not much of a boat for enforcing any place but, say, a salmon's or something like that. They sure wouldn't be out on the high seas with them.
Be the commissioner.
Pardon?
The commissioner.
He's really hung up on it.
Yeah, he thinks that they're... I asked him about this, you know.
Those boats?
Big enough to go out. And he said, oh, yeah.
Well, he won't be on one of them, that's for sure.
Well, I was
just oh, cripes, those are cracker boxes.
We've did, you like to see. Remember, we had the acting committee, we've questioned him, whether it was sufficient, and he's pretty hung up that that's the right boat for a rebuild.
Well, the reason I think that he's hung up is that he knows that if he comes in and asks for a new boat or a big boat, that he's coming in asking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million, and he knows that his chances of getting that are pretty damn slim because he's not having much luck getting $100,000 just to buy a new cap to throw in the T-boat, the hull that he's got.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason he's saying that, at least that's something. It's a bottom that'll get him out there. If nothing else, it would get him out in the Kodiak area, and that'll free the Resolution to head up west. But until we get a change of philosophy, where, right now everything is austerity, and, hold on to that money. It just isn't, to be honest, I could blow all kinds of smoke up your butt about how we're going to... I've got a bill filed right now to appropriate the money to buy a boat. But until the money picture changes, who am I kidding? I ain't kidding myself.
Of course, like I said, I don't think we're that desperate that we can afford, at least not to fight. For some, that your crab industry's turned in with $90-100 million this year, and not have a vessel or any protection on it. It's too big of an industry.
Well, what
I'm a member of Budget Audit, and we're going to meet this month unquestionably. And one of the subjects on the agenda will be the purchase of these three boats and their rehabilitation for the crab fisheries to the westward. Now, I'd like to ask you, fishermen, do you think that they are adequate sea boats?
No.
That's a very pertinent bit of information to have because they're going to be discussed, I'm sure, at considerable
length. Better than nothing.
Better than nothing.
You betcha.
Well, I think you're better off with one good boat than those.
You need a larger rig. That harbor's a little area, actually. Basically, they don't get over 10 miles offshore, so ADAC's a little different question.
Well, there's already an argument with respect to the that type of a boat as compared to a smaller boat, which unquestionably couldn't go as far off right at this time. And it'll be up for a vote, and I'd like to be able to vote intelligently as well.
Can I say something now?
Yes, go ahead.
I think they're adequate enough just in the being out there and kind of harassment, they're going to be limited, that's for sure. Going to be limited to how far out they go and what weather they can work in, but like they say, it's better than nothing, and if they can disperse them around through the fleet out there, and just the idea that knowing they're there is going to do more than other than actually being there.
See, the Department of State, safety for the state has the possibility of, I think, $800,000 of federal funds as a grant to rehabilitate one of these boats incidental to the patrol on the mammals of the sea and their possible harvest by unauthorized people. And that's one. And then I know there's another one before the budget of the state legislature that has three boats that's contemplated. Thank you.
Do you have any more, Mr.?
No, well, only one thing I think of is, you know, the way they got this tax set up where you put monies away off a good season, buy another boat. Yeah, it works real good for these, you know, the big seasons. You're almost silly not to build another boat. And I sure hope that we get some kind of a, this limited entry gets to working pretty darn fast or something, because otherwise there's just, well, there's too many boats now. You can eliminate half the fleet and still harvest every darn thing that is to be caught easily enough. And so I just hope that they get this limited entry working fast. That's all I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Heiner. Is there anyone else who wish to testify? Okay, we'll take a... there's this gentleman back here. But we're going to take a five-minute break first here. That's long enough to say. Give your name.
My name is Mike Rivard, and I'm a commercial fisherman. Rivard. And mainly just more things about enforcement, but perhaps a few points that weren't brought up before. I think our biggest enforcement problem is in the fleet that fishes here that doesn't live here, the non-residents, because they don't seem to be as interested in the fishery, naturally, as the residents are. I think one way we could... Oh, I'm sorry. One way we could get them to help pay for our research and enforcement, and since I feel the enforcement goes mostly towards their efforts, is to raise the non-resident commercial fishing license fee. And the enforcement is definitely needed more out west, you know, where there isn't any now. You can forget about flying out there, especially in the summertime, because the fog is just too bad for that. You can't see. As far as the T-boats go, I think they do the job. Enforcement doesn't need to get offshore that much anyway. The crab that I believe caused ADAC to be closed early this year were taken 3 miles off the beach. The buoys were there in the month of May. The pots were fishing in the month of May, and the boats were there in the month of May. The T-boats, or your enforcement boats, don't need to catch, in my opinion, a boat fishing and pulling pots. All they need to do is find gear in the water that's baited and has crab in it. You know, I'm for the 200-mile limit, and a little addition to why I'm for it is our non-resident fleet considers Alaska's enforcement to cease at our 3-mile limit. They feel like if the resolution comes along and they're fishing illegally, they know they're fishing illegally, all they have to do is pop out of the 3-mile limit and they feel like they're, you know, untouchable. The 200-mile limit would enhance enforcement and protection of our fisheries, even with our own American boats. An example, well, for instance, in the North Sea, England has a 12-mile limit, but they also have a 3-mile limit. And the English fleet is not allowed to fish within the 3-mile limit, even. You know, they only have 6 miles to themselves, and that's not very much room for them. As far as our salmon go that you were demonstrating a while ago, I don't think that the Japanese take a lot of salmon out of the Bering Sea, Bristol Bay area, but so do a lot of other countries too. And I think we're losing it anyway, you know, to those countries. And we should protect what we can. I think there's a future for the bottom fishing, even out west for Alaska. But it's being dragged right now, you know, 20 miles off the shore, they're dragging up fish all the time. So, and that's all I have to say.
Okay.
Mike, you mentioned the raising the non-resident license.
Hmm.
And as you can well imagine, this has been discussed many times down there in the legislature, and they tell us that the highest we can go is 3-1.
Well, raise the resident license too, then.
What would you consider a...
$10 a year for a commercial fisherman is, you know, I mean, what's that? If a commercial fisherman, I may be speaking out of turn, I don't know half these guys, but if the commercial fishing license was $50 for a resident, that wouldn't be that out of line. I don't feel it would be. I'd be glad to pay $50 and be paying for protection, for research, you know, and see the non-residents be paying 3-1, $150, you know, and be paying the three times. $30 is nothing, you know, just neither is 10. You know. That would be. I feel like $50 for a resident would be a fair figure, myself.
Now, on this enforcement penalty, now, we've had quite a bit of discussion on it. Now, how do you think that if we changed some of our laws, you know, there's some people just doing it just as boldly as if you went.
They certainly are.
Drove a truck in through a front door of a furniture store and loaded everything up and took it out.
That's right.
I mean, they're damaging a resource instead of just stealing some furniture. You figure that if they changed our laws and say made a felony on some of these violations?
Well, sure, it should be a felony too. I feel it should be. The slap on the wrist type things that are happening now, for instance, if a boat's caught with illegal crab, they lose their crab. Maybe they get a little fine, and they go right back out and finish the season. Sometimes in the salmon, I believe, perhaps they stand a chance of losing their license or having it suspended or something like that. But this still is not, it's not that much. It should be a stiffer penalty, yes, I think.
What do you think that if a man were caught illegally fishing during a closed period or in a closed area, and proven guilty, and had his license taken away from him for the rest of that year?
Well, for the rest of that year is one thing. Now, one thing, though, while I'm at it, I don't own a boat, okay, right now. I work for someone else. Now, that someone else is a skipper of a boat. He's in charge. You're working for him. You know. I don't think that the stiff penalties should apply so much to the crew members that aren't doing the pot setting. You know, I mean, they're not saying where to put those pots, right? And they can't exactly get off the boat right there. And they can't really, if they're going to protect their families, raise too much hell with the skipper. The stiffer penalties and fines should be leaned on the person, on the master of his ship. The master of his boat.
Well, of course, he has a boat license.
Right. The boat license would be lifted for a year, that would be better. Or even in, say that for the first offense. You know, but second offenses, I think it could be stiffer than that.
Can I comment on that yet? When you start thinking about that, you have smaller boats and things that grows as much. One of these bigger boats steal one load of crap, he's got $100,000 to fight you in court, and he's got a damn good chance of beating you in court, but you go out and rest some smaller boat that's only grossed $4,000 that year, and he hasn't kept hired a lawyer or people to fight you in court, and he's going to lose it. But 9 chances out of 10, that big one's going to win that case in court. So there's a lot to take into consideration
that's
as you start
true.
Thinking about whose license you're going to end up taking away.
Well, sooner or later, fishermen, I feel, are going to end up by policing your own industry, and you're going to end up by determining your own fines. And a lot of that stuff. And the reason you're going to do it is just simply this, that it is your crab, and anybody who steals it is stealing something from you.
And I think we're doing that a hell of a lot right now. I think in the last year I can name 100 times where there was gross, monstrous violations going on that were going on for months. We went down to the enforcement office, Department of Fish and Game, beat on the desk every day, told them exactly where it was gone, exactly where the boats were, and it went on for months. There was a damn thing done about it. And I can name 50 of them, and probably the last year alone where we beat on a desk knew where the boats were. Even Department of Fish and Game flew over, the Coast Guard flew over, reported 7 boats 600 miles from a legal area, and they were there for 2 months and not a damn thing was done. So I think we're beginning to do a little turning in, but with no results on this.
Where was that area at?
This was in the ADAC area.
ADAC area.
Amelia Island.
Amelia
Island.
Right there, delivering bags was caught in a Dutch harbor area down here that had to travel 800 miles and never been a record of it.
Crap.
Delivering right to our dock while we're all sitting here not fishing and getting tags that are tagged in Dutch harbor and caught in North Pole or some damn place.
Well, I know and made the statement that any fisherman can catch any other fisherman. You know, if he's breaking the law.
Yeah, but you got to tell somebody, you know, people you tell it, they ain't going to do nothing about it or don't have the enforcement of it.
Well, that's a criticism that your local legislators here should carry for you back to Juneau and raise hell with Commissioner Chappell or whoever else it is.
And we do, and then he says, well, where's that money we need for the engine? And we're right back to the Finance Committee.
No, this is something that's going to be getting a lot of attention this next session. Don't let us agree with you. And they're coming out, and a lot of these cases is, if they have it, they will get to the commissioner. And it's the ammunition we use to get more and better equipment. Maybe do some shaking up of some dead wood or something, you know, down the line or something like that. Well, you got something to add?
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to say a little while ago, you know, this westward area, dollar westward area, they opened it up. And it's just a license to steal an ADAC. It shouldn't have been opened up until they have adequate enforcement. If it isn't opened up, then they can't go out there and fish. Because it's the only place they could come from with crab at that time of the year, west from that area. It's the only area open in the state. And that just gives them a license to steal, is all it amounts to. And no crab come from there anyway. They don't even go out there.
Farther out west shouldn't be open until it's researched and they know there's crab there and they have the enforcement to carry it out.
Of course, so again, that's a Board of Fish and Game matter. Go ahead, Tom.
So they're getting crab from out there when they're not, and no crab out.